vibe that I wanted on the show today. Chwani's dancing.
Yes, he is.
Boy, this goes back.
Summer Samba.
Walter Wanderley.
Yep.
I'm sure our producer has all his records. Eli, don't you have all his records?
I'm working on my collection.
Eli says, what's a record?
I think I used to skate to this song at the actual roller rink in Niles.
Yeah.
I'll bet.
That's right.
Yeah.
Couples only.
Exactly.
I love this. This is who should be appearing at Lollapalooza. If only Walter Wanderley wasn't dead, he would be fantastic at Lollapalooza.
Could you just imagine the mosh pit that would develop?
I think it would go crazy. I think the kids going to Lollapalooza would love this. We don't hear enough organ music on, in general.
Play some Jimmy Smith next week.
Oh, Jimmy Smith, one of the greats. Doesn't this scream summertime, though? This song?
Oh, yeah. This actually was...
I have a taste for a pina colada right now.
This actually was on the WLS Silver Dollar Survey back
this,
in the 60s.
What is this WLS that you speak of?
The Big 89.
I'm not familiar with that song.
Oh, no, you don't know that song.
I have no idea what that is. Yes, I'm not one bit surprised that that was on the top 40.
Yep.
Because 1966.
Right, 66.
And that's when, you know, songs that you wouldn't expect during that rock and roll era. We're making it big. Remember that song, Love is Blue?
Love is Blue, Paul Moriarty. How about Summer Wind, Frank Sinatra?
Summer Wind, Strangers in the Night.
Strangers in the Night, a huge
hit.
That
was the number one song on the pops charts.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was.
On this Big 89 of which you speak. Whatever happened to them, by the way? Are they still on the air? I don't know. I heard this song during the week, and I've been listening to it nonstop ever since.
Have you really?
I enjoyed it so much.
You know, I Googled the song on the Google machine not too long ago myself, actually. Just kind of was inquisitive about what happened to Walter Wanderley.
Died of lung cancer.
Did he?
At a young age.
Mm.
I think he was like 52 or something like that.
That's a young age.
He was Brazil's number one jazz organist.
He was from Brazil?
He was from Brazil.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
That fits the whole bossa thing from the 60s.
Yep.
Definitely.
I still have a taste for a pina colada.
Why don't you order one on your phone?
Don't get me started on that phone. About 10 times so far already, I've reached for my phone just to, you know, to check things. And because the computer updated, I'll just use the computer. I can't get into anything on the computer.
Mm.
Everything's reset. So, first world problems for Uncle Dean today.
Go help him out, Eli.
Condolences to the family of Maury Edelson. Do you know who I'm talking about? Maury Edelson.
Mm-hmm.
Famous TV pitch man for his the car dealership that he co-owned, I guess.
Yep.
With Nick Solozzi.
Solozzi Edelson.
Solozzi Edelson. And they were, you know, famous. They did their own television commercials, and they became part of pop culture in the 1970s and 80s. Here is one of their famous commercials from 1985. Oops, wait a minute. Let me turn that off.
Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Use that as the music bit.
Yeah, that's nice for an obituary. Very nice. Solozzi Edelson, 1985.
Solozzi Edelson Chevrolet is number one in sales. because of our guaranteed sales policy.
You want the best price and the greatest selection.
So we offer over 1,500 new cars and trucks ready for immediate delivery.
We offer low-rate financing to qualified buyers.
Plus, we guarantee you'll save more money on any new car or truck, or we give you back the difference in cash.
At Solozzi Edelson Chevrolet in Elmhurst, at York and Roosevelt Roads,
where you always save more money.
Yeah, there you go. Where you always save more money. That was their,
oh, yeah.
That was their pitch line. Maury Edelson was the one with the mustache, if you're thinking back and remembering the commercials. Do you remember that, Johnny?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Didn't they throw, like, money at the camera when they said this?
They had money in their hands.
They had money in their hand. Yeah.
Right. Kind of fanned out like cards.
And they would wave it when they said,
"That's what
always
save more money.
They sort of waved it at the camera back then. But they were among the, the famous TV pitchmen. What was the other guy? Schmerler.
The singing Ford dealer?
The singing
Harry Schmerler?
Harry Schmerler, yeah. The singing Ford dealer.
Yeah. Rock-a-bye your baby.
And then, of course, there was Burt Wyman Ford over there on Western, on Madison and, was that Ashland? Yeah.
Yep.
They were always part of the Cubs leadoff man show.
They did. They used to do the, Lynn Burton used to do the commercials in the WGN garage.
Oh, wow.
They would pull the cars into the garage. And my understanding is that they had rotating platforms so the cars could, move. And you could see the car from all angles while he was doing the commercials from back in the day. Timmy the Long Chevrolet Kid.
Extract.
I was waiting for you to mention him.
What about Eagle Man?
Eagle Man. We've had some fantastic TV pitchmen in the Chicago area.
I've got something for you.
Who was the one that had his mother or his grandmother something doing the commercials? Wow.
I'm trying to think.
Apparently I'm the only one that remembers that. Someone will remember. Somebody on our text line will come through.
Is that working for you this morning also?
The text lines. It's one of the few things working.
That is working for you?
It's one of the few things that is operative today.
Operative.
Yeah, whatever.
Not operative.
Yeah, whatever.
You are speaking incorrectly.
Yeah. Oh, how do we forget Bob Roarman?
Oh, yeah.
Somebody on the text line remembering it. He was a great guy. Really, he used to come to the TV station all the time. I would talk to him. Really, really great guy. Bob Roarman.
Exactly.
He had dealerships everywhere.
Yeah. Packy Webb Ford. Oh, and what about Victory Auto Wreckers? Somebody says on the text line.
Well, that goes without saying, right?
I don't want to brag.
But wasn't that commercial on a Super Bowl?
Yes, it was. It wasn't nationally on the Super Bowl. It was, but it was locally. Locally, Victory Auto Wreckers ran a commercial during the Super Bowl. Yeah.
That's how big it was.
Yeah. Someone is remembering this commercial with the mom on it right now. Someone, it was, she would say, the mother would say, Howard, she was always baking cookies. Do you remember that?
Vaguely, yes.
The mother said it was on Grand Avenue.
Oh, right. Yeah, that would be the tagline.
Yeah.
Such and such and such Grand Avenue.
The grandmother would pitch making cookies for customers, and the dealership was on Grand Avenue in Bensonville.
That's right.
Howard Pontiac and Elmhurst on Grand Avenue.
Mm. Wonderful. Thank
you. How smart our listeners are.
I know it. Yep.
Very nice. Very, very nice. So, our condolences to the Edelson family. He was 93 years old.
Yeah.
It's a good long life. So, who do we have on the program today, you're probably asking yourself?
Yes, who do we have on the program today?
None other than Lily Tomlin.
Oh, right.
She's going to be joining us. She's producing... Not in the play, but she's producing the new play at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater about the life of Billie Jean King.
Right.
The tennis icon. And I actually did not interview her. she was available for interviews the week before last when I was having my health crisis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And my pal Mike Lowe filled in for me. And he talked with Lily Tomlin. So we're going to share that interview coming up in a little while.
You mean the man that sung the seventh inning stretch yesterday at Wrigley Field?
Yeah. How did he do?
From all accounts, he was great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not surprised.
He's not surprised at all.
Very, very nice voice. It was in honor of Ryan Sandberg.
Yes. And he got to know Rhino pretty well during both of their battles with cancer.
Right. So it was, perfect that Mike be part of the tribute to Rhino. It's really nice to see the outpouring of love for him.
Oh, yeah.
Horrible that he was taken from us. We're going to talk more about prostate cancer when we do our health segment in a couple of minutes. But it seemed like he had, they had the cancer under control, and then they didn't, and spread.
It was just a little over a year prior that he had made the announcement he was cancer-free, right. And then it came back.
Came back at the end of 2024.
Right.
Yeah, and there's certain sports-related passings that hit you harder than others. I mean, it's obviously sad when anyone, especially at only the age of 65, is taken from us, as you said. But Rhino was one of those guys kind of in my wheelhouse as a kid growing up here in Chicago. I was a junior and then a senior in high school when the 1984 season was going on, well aware of what was happening and just kind of really appreciating the way he played the game and not really understanding that, he was a little bit of a prankster behind the scenes because he was always very stoic on the field and in the interviews.
Yeah, even kind of quiet and shy.
Yeah.
And very soft-spoken.
I got a chance to interview him a few times. I knew his stepson and reached out to him earlier this week. But it was amazing how, after his playing days, how much looser and more free he was with his thoughts. And his Hall of Fame speech goes down as one of the very best.
One of the greatest of all time.
Talking about respect for the game and the only way he knew how to play it. And Jane Forbes Clark, who was the chairperson of the board of the Hall of Fame a week ago today, as a matter of fact, reiterated some of the lines that Rhino uttered from that speech just before the induction ceremony, because obviously Rhino was too ill to attend at Cooperstown. And that's kind of when I started to figure out that things were not going very well,
right.
Unfortunately. And
right.
Later the next day is when Rhino passed.
Well, he certainly made his mark as one of the most beloved personalities of all time. I think it goes beyond just a sports figure or a baseball person.
I agree.
As one of the great Chicagoans of all time. Yeah.
Just like for us, Dean growing up in the 60s, Ernie Banks and Ron Santo, Billy Williams.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a very, very sad story, so... we'll talk more about prostate cancer in our Week in Health segment coming up in a few minutes. All of us guys should be checked for this. It's a lot less invasive than it used to be.
Yeah, blood test.
To get checked for this now. And there's no reason that everybody shouldn't know their status with this. So, we'll get into more of that coming up in just a little while here.
I just had a very good lifelong friend diagnosed with prostate cancer, had the surgery, and I'm happy to report that he has been cleared.
Yeah. More often than not, it's pretty survivable these days.
If you do indeed have to have the surgery is much less invasive than it once was.
Yeah, they do it.
And the permanent effects are less,
Right, the permanent effects of how it leaves you.
Right.
After the surgery, because it's so non-invasive.
That's right. They don't have to do as much cutting.
Right.
Bottom line there, yeah.
I know somebody that had it done with robots.
That's how it was done for my friend.
I forget what that's it's called. Something
robotic surgery is.
Oh, well, okay. They would have come up with a fancier name than that. But it's the robots do everything because they can do it much more precision than the human eye.
And you go in from a couple of different angles.
Yeah.
It's not just one. It's several different ways to avoid cutting nerves and major blood vessels.
Right, right.
So
yeah. So anyway, we'll dig into this more. We'll talk more about severed blood vessels.
Great.
Enjoy your breakfast, everyone. We'll be right back. The familiar whistling sounds of the opening of the Andy Griffith Show, also now synonymous with America's favorite feature, the far-flung forecast. What?
Okay.
We're happy to report funding has not been cut for the far-flung forecast.
Very, it still very cost, good to hear.
Still cost absolutely nothing to produce, so. We're once again proud to present to you Dave Schwann.
Well, thank you very much, Uncle Dean, and friends and neighbors. Get out your compasses and protractors and newfangled devices. We head out west. In fact, north by northwest.
Can I add?
Has nothing to do with the movie.
Can I interject one thing? There's not a week that goes by where someone doesn't ask me, why does he want me to get my protractor out?
We have no idea.
Well, because you're
I find it's better not to ask, really, just to let it go. But enough people ask me now, I'm going to dump it in your lap.
Okay. Send me the messages. I will answer them.
Well, it's
a measuring device, and it has been used by cartographers over the years.
I think that's map makers.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We go north by northwest, and that has nothing to do with
the movie.
To Helena, Montana.
Oh.
Helena, Montana happens to be the capital of Montana.
Is that right?
And was founded in the 1860s. There was a gold rush out that way. And Helena, Montana now has a population of 32,091, but it's the fifth least populous state capital in the U.S. Do you have that? The fifth least populous state capital in the United States.
I tuned out when you said it's not about the movie.
Okay. But we don't bring up Helena, Montana for that reason.
Of course not.
We bring up Helena, Montana because it was once the home to a minor league baseball team called the Helena Phillies or the Helena Brewers, where a young 18-year-old Ryne Sandberg first made his debut into baseball. Andy, am I pretty much correct
on
this?
Very much correct.
Excellent. Thank you very
much. I knew that he was from Montana.
He's actually from Spokane, Washington.
Oh, that's where the Phillies.
I never knew that either.
The Phillies single A affiliate was located there.
Oh, yeah, Helena Brewers, the Helena Phillies, now dissolved. I think that franchise has moved.
Yeah, they've all moved.
1978. An 18-year-old Ryne Sandberg starting there, and also one of his teammates there was Bob Dernier.
Yes, he was.
So wanted to pay tribute to the great Rhino today on the broadcast, as we've been talking about all week here. Helena, Montana has mostly sunny skies and 57 today.
I love when you get all sportsy.
Sportsy?
Yeah. I feel like I just want to whip you with a wet towel right now. Oh, wait a minute. We just heard that.
You're playing. That's the closing credits.
That's the closing credits?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's really close it out and move on to the
Dean Richards Sunday Morning. Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
Is the time. This is gonna be the and this is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. Time for the weekend health. What information can we arm you with to make you the healthiest possible? Joining us this week is Dr. Santina Wheat, who is the program director, McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency, Northwestern University. Dr. Wheat, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So we were talking about Ryan Sandberg a few minutes ago on the program and his diagnosis of prostate cancer that seems like it went into remission and then came back with a fury. Not so much about Rhino's case in particular, but I wanted to talk about prostate cancer in general and what men need to know about protecting themselves, what red flags to look for. How prevalent is prostate cancer?
You know, prostate cancer becomes so very prevalent as men age. It is something that as you get older, we just find to be more and more common. Fortunately, it's slow growing, so many people never actually see the symptoms of it right away. But it's something that everybody should be looking out for.
What are the symptoms?
So most often, when there are symptoms, it has to do with things that make it difficult to urinate. So maybe it's you're waking up a lot at nighttime, or there's a difficulty or pain when you're urinating, or feeling like you just never empty. Sometimes even seeing blood in your urine. Things that sometimes can be maybe checked off as, oh, I'm just getting older, I have to go to the bathroom more often. But that is really a reason to go talk to your doctor.
Yeah, I've always heard that prostate cancer was fairly survivable. Is that, for the most part, still, is that true?
That is absolutely true still for the most part, especially when we are able to find it early. And so, like I said, if you have any of those symptoms, it's a good reason to come see one of us. But we are often able to catch it early and treat it because it's fairly slow growing. That, of course, is different if it moves to other part of the body.
And it's a really simple test now. It used to be a very invasive test that men didn't really want to go through. But now it's simply done as part of a blood test. So it couldn't be easier to have things checked now, right?
Absolutely. So you can absolutely do a blood test even with your family doctor, just like me, if you're concerned about symptoms. If that blood test is elevated, then we will recommend that you go and speak to a specialist, and there might be additional confirmatory testing, but that initial screen absolutely is easy.
So when prostate cancer does go unchecked, you said it's very slow growing. Does that mean that it's been there for a while, that it's, you know, one of these cancers that by the time you know you have it, it may be too late?
It can be. So I will say for most people it's slow growing, but for others it can move fairly quickly. So it's still important to get checked out. But sometimes men can have it for years and it really hasn't moved very far. And so if it spreads to other parts of the body, then that's when we worry about it the most.
And that apparently is what happened with Ryan Sandberg, because he had announced months ago that it seems to have went into remission, only to have come back and had spread. So apparently, I mean, as I say, I don't want to get into his case. I don't know if you're familiar enough with it or not, but it, you know, it's neither here nor there. But the point is, for other people who think, oh, it's okay, I don't have any symptoms, you still need to get it checked out because you don't know what may be going on inside.
Absolutely. And like I said, if we can find it early and treat it, most men are able to live with it. But when it spreads to places like the lungs, the liver, or the bones, then it really impacts your survival. And so we really want to catch it before it goes there.
And treatment now for prostate cancer has advanced. It used to be very debilitating for men physically. Now, because of the ways that it is treated, once discovered, it's not as invasive, it's not as long-lasting of a permanent effect anymore, is it?
Absolutely. I am really thrilled to see how much we've been able to advance in this research, and some of the treatment is much more directed at where the cancer is, and so absolutely, when found early, again, it can be much easier to treat and with a lot fewer side effects.
And is it true it's done now, treated robotically, that it's treated with radiated pellets. I've heard lots of different ways that people who learn that they have prostate cancer are treated, and there are virtually no effects afterwards.
Absolutely. There are so many different ways. Each case is different. And so some people are treated with surgery. Some people are treated with radiation therapy. And like you said, those pellets or the seeds that are there to specifically go after the cancer. And then there are still some people that will be treated with either hormone therapy or chemotherapy. Every case is different again. But the advancements have been wonderful and are much more targeted than they used to be.
What are the advantages of this robotic surgery now? Is it just so much more precise?
That's absolutely right. So we are often seeing that when we move towards robotic surgery, that it allows it to be through smaller incisions and be more precise so that the recovery time and the amount of impact to the rest of your body is less. Our surgeons have really advanced in amazing ways.
Yeah, that truly is amazing. Get that blood test, guys. I'm telling you what, it's something that you definitely want to do. Another health story that I found kind of interesting this week, singer Justin Timberlake was diagnosed with Lyme disease and had to cancel concerts and, you know, all that sort of thing. What is Lyme disease?
So Lyme disease is an illness that is often spread by ticks, and in the U.S. and particularly the upper Midwest, it is by deer ticks. And it is a disease that can have some really weird signs and symptoms. Sometimes it just starts with a rash that maybe you don't even see because it's in a part of your body that's hard to see, and then can have joint pains and feeling like you're feeling overall crummy. And so this is right the time of year that we see the most of it. So it's absolutely something to watch out for.
And once somebody is diagnosed, what is it that they do?
So we do antibiotic treatments, and even when we see someone that has early disease, we can give early antibiotic treatments and have a fairly high cure rate with this. So it's really important to be paying attention, especially if you are out in the woods or out in shrubbery, which is where we see ticks the most often, to pay attention to see if there's any on you, because we can even give you medication to prevent having the symptoms of it. But most commonly, we treat you with antibiotics.
Our phone number and text number, as always, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. If you've got a comment or question for Dr. Wheat, we're happy to get to your questions. I want to talk about the upsurge of COVID, which is rising in many states around the U.S. right now. We'll get to all of that and more when we come right back.
WGN. Dean Richards, Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
Don't 951, Dean Richards. 720 WGN coming up in our next half hour. One-on-one with comedy legend Lily Tomlin. Producing a play over at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater. Producing, not performing in, but still a really interesting conversation about Billie Jean King, the tennis icon. That's what the play is about. So that's coming up on our Week in Theater segment in just a bit. Dr. Santina Wheat with us on our Week in Health segment for this week. And some phone calls at 312-981-7200. Let's start off with Donna in St. Charles. Good morning. You're on WGN.
Good morning. My grandson has Lyme disease. It did not catch it early. And I'm just wondering what goes on with that.
Wow, that is a great question. Everyone is a little bit different, and we unfortunately then have to often treat for a longer period of time and do some management to make sure that there's not any further challenges. But usually we will follow and see sort of where the levels are, and sometimes we'll need to do pain management and just some additional therapies to make sure that they are feeling better. But it is still absolutely something to recover from. It just takes a little bit longer when you find it later.
Do I remember correctly that Lyme disease is often treated with antibiotics, or maybe I'm not remembering correctly or read incorrectly.
Nope, you have it right. We usually start with antibiotics, absolutely. But because it also has some symptoms of like arthritis with swollen joints and pain, we also will have to do the pain medicines to help with that to get through the symptoms.
Donna,
Is it curable?
It can be curable, but everybody's case is a little bit different. And so it would be hard for me to say exactly what symptoms your grandson has. And if there's other inflammation, then there's sometimes other treatments that we have to do along the way.
Okay, thank you.
All right, good luck to your grandson with that. We appreciate the call. Lyle, you're next on WGN. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
I got a question about prostate cancer treatment.
Okay.
I've been diagnosed with prostate cancer, the aggressive form, and they have got me on hormone therapy with Relugolix tablets. And I've also heard of the nano knife procedure. What does the doctor think of those two things?
I think that those are great treatment options. If you have an aggressive form and this is the type that your doctor is recommending, then I would absolutely listen with them and go for it. It still is probably the best option for you to decrease the growth of the prostate cancer and then also allow for other treatments to make the cancer smaller. So I think that sounds like a great regimen for you.
Okay. Have you heard of the nano knife procedure?
I have heard of it. I have not yet had a patient that has gone through it, but I have seen good recommendations from it.
Is nano knife procedure like a conventional surgery where an actual knife is used to remove the cancerous portion of the prostate?
That is my understanding, that it absolutely is a little bit more directed towards where it's going and just a more precise procedure.
Got it. All right. Well, Lyle, good luck to you on all of this. Get all those procedures done.
All right. Thanks.
Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. And let's go to Steve next. He's in Orland Park, and you are on WGN. Hello, my friend.
Good morning, everybody, and good morning, doctor. My question is there any cure for tinnitus or tinnitus, which is ear ringing? And I'll disconnect the call to listen to your response. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Go ahead. Explain what it's tinnitus, I think, correct?
I hear people say it differently every time. Okay. I always call it tinnitus, but right. I accept both, and that is ringing in the ears. It really depends on what the cause of it is. I have some patients that were able to go through different treatment options, and allow it to get better, but I have some patients that we have to work through just different things to help accommodate and have it not be quite so loud. Sometimes people use earplugs when they need to sort of decrease the extra noise. And it can be one that is pretty challenging to treat, unfortunately, and fairly uncomfortable.
Yeah. What causes it?
It really depends. Sometimes there is challenges in the middle ear. Sometimes it's from a history of being exposed to loud sounds and having hearing loss with that. Sometimes it's a signal of other things, of tumors or other changes, primarily in the inner ear. And it really is a different option for every person.
All right. It seems like every week we bring up COVID for, a variety of reasons.
Sure.
I actually tested positive for COVID a couple of weeks ago. I got out of isolation about a week ago from it. Doing much better, feeling much better. Thank you, everybody, for so many nice and supportive comments. But after I tested positive, I learned there is an upsurge going on right now, correct?
There sure is. There's actually, it's thought to be growing or likely growing in 40 of the states in the U.S. right now. So we are really seeing it grow across the country right now.
So is it too late to simply go get a vaccination?
It That's an interesting question. Not everybody is recommended to have a vaccine right now, particularly if you got one last year. If you are not up to date, it never hurts to go and get a vaccine. I will always recommend that. I will say the good news that we are seeing right now is that the strain that's coming through our country does not seem to be much more aggressive than the ones that we saw last year, if at all more aggressive. It just seems to be fairly contagious. So it's something to really watch out for right now. It's coming pretty quickly.
Yeah, and if all of you, you know, sort of became lax and lazy about wearing masks and, you know, taking precautions, I'm the poster boy for that right now of becoming lax with all of that because you think, you know, well, we're done with COVID. It's over. You know, I can go back to sort of a normal life again. We really can probably never go back to a normal life, I guess, right?
I think that's true, and I know people really think of our respiratory illness surges in the winter, but the thing that came with COVID is we actually get two surges. So we usually do get this summer surge, or we have every year since it's been around. And so this summertime surge is unfortunately to be expected, and then we will probably see another one again in the winter.
847 area code says, I had a measles shot 45 years ago. Should I get another one now?
Oh, that is difficult to say. Probably worth going and talking to your doctor. You probably do need another one. Some of us that got it around that time, one wasn't enough, and you probably need at least a second one. And also, there were former measles shots that were not quite as effective, and so it might be worth a booster.
Dr. Santina Wheat, Program Director, McGaw Northwestern Family Medicine Residency, Northwestern Medicine, Del Nor Hospital. Fantastic job today. Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, and I'm glad you're feeling better.
Thank you. So Michael O did a pretty good job singing the seventh inning stretch.
That's not an easy thing to do from what I've heard.
No, it's not. Shawnee, do you have that tape
still? I do right here. Yes, sir.
Oh, one, up two, up three, take it.
There you go. He hit his stride.
Yeah.
Half the song there. I didn't have the whole thing.
It's terrifying. You've never done it?
I have never done it. I was asked to do it one time when I was with the Padres.
Ooh.
We came to town in April of 2007 and played a 14-inning game.
Wow.
And whoever did it in the seventh inning was long gone. And they came to me in like the 13th and they said, well, if it goes to the 14th, do you want to do it? I'm like, no. There was nobody left in the ballpark, first of all.
I did it one time. It is terrifying.
That's what I've heard. Everybody looking up at you.
Everybody in the ballpark is looking up at the press box, staring at you.
And then you're on TV to boot.
And you're on TV, you're on radio, you're on, you know, it's like, okay, here we go.
Mm-hmm. And it lives forever.
It does live forever.
Just ask Mike Ditka.
Yes, I was thinking that.
I was smart enough to, I brought all of my nieces and nephews with me. So if we stunk, I was going to blame it on them.
You would do that. You would do that.
Hey, who's going to criticize little kids?
Exactly. See, now Mike was brave because there's a lot of people that will go up there and say a one, a two, a three, and they'll go take, and then they'll bring the microphone out. Like Harry used to do.
Yeah, they wave it around.
And then they come back with root for the Cubbies, and then they Mike decided to sing it, which is good. It's brave, and, you know, he, why not?
Let's go back to July 5th, 1998, shall we?
A one, and a two, and a three. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. All these happy nuts and grandkids, I don't care if I ever get back.
The organist is trying to keep up with him.
Hey, one, two, three, smash it out at the old four.
Oh, love that. He did not back off. He didn't wave the microphone
around.
No,
he didn't.
He stayed committed to that.
And Gary Pressey, of course, keeping up, sorry, at least
poor
speeding
Gary.
Gary,
up there,
right.
At the
end. Yeah.
Gary could write a book on
yes.
people who have gone up there to sing the seventh inning stretch.
Yes, he could.
What it was like. Well, way to go, Mike Lowe.
Amen to that.
Not only for singing and have the courage to do it. I'm telling you what, it's terrifying while you're standing up there. But for all the money that Mike has raised for cancer research especially, that's even more important.
Oh, yeah.
Coming up.
Just in the last few days, raising $1.5 million.
Yeah. Mike Lowe's a good guy.
He's a good cat, isn't he?
Mm-hmm. He's a good guy. Yeah, I'm trying to think of something bad to say about him. I can't think of one thing to say bad about him, that is. Now, Schwanee, I've got a long list of things.
That I have no doubt.
That's what. Wait, let me get out my scroll here.
Dean Richards, WGN.
I'll give you $10,000 if you can tell me who this is. Sing.
Is it Beyonce or Taylor Swift?
No.
Okay.
A for effort, though. Huh? At least you knew two artists from this century. This is Sabrina Carpenter, Schwanee.
Okay.
She is the headliner for the final night of Lollapalooza.
Lollapalooza? Oh. That sounds good.
This has been a very diverse Lollapalooza. You know, usually we make fun of it. It's like, well, I don't know any of the artists at Lollapalooza. I'm so old, I don't know any of the artists. This has been a very diverse lineup of performers. Luke, how about Luke Combs? On Thursday night.
Yeah.
Top country star.
And he's wearing a Sandberg jersey, too.
And was wearing a Sandberg jersey. How about that? Yep. He took in some Chicago while he was here. But Schwanee, he's the one who redid Tracy Chapman's song, Fast Car.
Okay. I think it's fine.
Tracy Chapman was a singer back in the 1980s.
The late 80s, yeah. She had a fast car.
They've had, you know, this is a pop music. This Sabrina Carpenter, Olivia Rodrigo, who was the headliner, was it Friday? I think she was. Pop music, totally pop music. They had a K-pop, all-girl K-pop band as one of the headliners one night. It's been very, very diverse, not just, chainsaw rock and roll.
Chainsaw rock and roll.
Right, you know what I mean? So, and I haven't heard of any incidents. Have I just missed it? It's been reported.
No, you haven't. You have not heard of any problems or issues. The biggest issue, if you want to call it that, has been the air quality.
Yeah,
given the fact that you've got so many people in such a relatively small space, but there hasn't been any big problems.
Well, the air quality is more because of the Canadian fires, right?
Right, but you've got people in such a concentrated area there, and poor air quality. You know, could lead to some potential health problems.
Yeah, you're right. But I don't think anything, unusual. I haven't heard about gate crashing. I haven't heard about fights. The weather could not be more perfect.
Oh, it's been great.
Oh, yeah.
It's been absolutely great. Perfect.
Incidentally, if any of our listeners haven't ventured around the area of Lollapalooza, especially if you're headed in the southbound lanes.
And who wouldn't want to be, by the way?
if you're headed in the southbound lanes of DeSable Lakeshore Drive, be aware that the area between Randolph Street and Roosevelt Road can be, it can be down to two lanes in some spots, right, because they've put in big snowplow trucks right around the area of Buckingham Fountain. So not only can you not turn onto Monroe or Jackson or Belbo, but you've got those, you've got that down to two lanes there. So I was telling Andy, I was coming in Friday from the near north side. It took me an hour to get, ordinarily it would take 15, 20 minutes, but it took me an hour on Friday.
If you're not going to Lollapalooza, I mean, if you are going to Lollapalooza, you don't want to bring your car that close to the fest grounds anyway.
No.
Park in the Millennium Park underground garage if you can find a spot.
If you can do it, good luck.
There are plenty of, you know what? Because I was there Thursday morning doing my reporting for TV from there. So I go to park my car in one lot, and it was $70 for me to park. If I had done it, I didn't choose that lot. I went somewhere else. If I had gone to that lot for just 4 hours, $70. And so I go one block away to a different lot, $16.
Insane.
Yeah. So shop around if you're going to be doing that. I suspect for our listeners, there's probably more, I'm going to drop the kids off to go to the fest. And, you know, but if you do that, drop them off on State Street or something, right? Doesn't that make more sense?
Yeah, State and Randolph or something, close by.
Yeah,
close
Michigan Avenue is going to be a nightmare.
Michigan
Avenue is going to be
a nightmare. Here again, really the best bet, public transportation.
Yeah, you're right. And the other alternative to this, if you get out there, you get tired, you want to, just sit down, relax for a little while. Schwani opens his house up to people, total strangers. He invites total strangers into his house.
How do you know this?
To come and relax. Oh, there's plenty of
and
buzz.
And how do you know this?
There's plenty of buzz on the street about you, my
really?
Friend. Yeah,
well,
yeah. All the kids are talking about Schwani. That's all you got to mention. It's like, oh, yeah, that's where I crashed last year.
He's got a great pad.
He's got a great pad.
Well, then they can listen to my Buckingham's records and my,
That's the only downside. If you crash at Schwani's house,
Tommy James and the Shondells,
you have to listen to stuff about the 60s for 3 hours while you're there. It's like a symposium that he puts on.
PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, believe me, you just stay out in the sunshine. You'll be better off. So a text from the 630 area code. Dean, a long time ago, we went on a cooking cruise in Italy with you.
Huh.
Which is interesting because I don't remember.
You don't remember it.
we did a couple of cruises to Italy, but they were not specifically cooking cruises. I don't even know if we went to cooking classes.
Well, I remember you doing a cruise to Alaska.
Yeah.
You also did a cruise around Croatia, which
we
couldn't stop talking about.
Italy.
You said it was fantastic.
I don't remember.
When did you do the Italy cruise?
We've done two or three. I've done at least two that included Italy. Italy, France, Greece. We've done a couple of not specifically cooking cruises, but, whatever. But let me continue with the text that said, you were fun, but you seemed a little bit shy.
I'm sure it was you.
Shy?
Do I seem shy to you?
Was it
no,
you?
You don't seem shy. People could come up to you and say, are you Dean Richards? I love your show. And you just kind of look at him and
that's
go,
when I have
yes.
That's when I have my security people
what
tackle
What do you
them.
Want?
My security, you'll already be put in a paddy wagon before you get to finish that sentence. No. Actually, I think I am a little bit shy.
You were shy.
just a shy little flower. But here, let me continue reading. I suggest you do another WGN cruise, but this time include Dave Schwann, his girlfriend, Andy, and his wife.
We're in.
There you go. Let's do it.
You guys are the, wait, I got to read the best part of the text. You guys are the best on Sunday morning. Great rapport always. From Linda in Naperville. Thank you, Linda, for that. Yes, I would love to do a...
Oh, Gilda would be up for a cruise right now.
Melina would go today, too.
I would love to do a cooking cruise.
Even better.
Linda just sent in a correction saying it was a food cruise.
A food cruise. Okay, all right.
Okay.
It was Italy. Yeah, we did eat a lot of food in Italy. That's true.
I'll have to pack a suitcase for alternative foods.
I would love to do that. It would be fun. I was actually thinking about doing a cruise with listeners to Sicily.
Nice.
Does that sound nice to both of you?
Yes, let's go.
Yes, it does.
I was thinking about, have you heard of the island of Ikiria in Greece? Some people say Ikiria, but I think the correct way to say it is Ikiria. It's the island where everybody lives to be 100 years old. It's one of those blue zones.
Those blue zones, yeah.
Where everybody, it's like super healthy.
They live on yogurt.
They live, you know. I was thinking, how cool would that be to take a food cruise to someplace like that and learn recipes and see the sights and be stuck?
We had great food on Mykonos.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
One of the best restaurants I've ever been to is on the island of Santorini.
On Santorini?
Santorini. Yeah,
you know, that was the only downside of our trip there. We didn't spend enough time there, and I wanted to.
Yeah.
You ate on Santorini?
Santorini is the most beautiful place I've ever seen in my entire life.
Fabulous.
It's beautiful.
The sunset is unbelievable.
Oh. But I went to this, recommended to me, we went to this restaurant that was right on the sea, and they would catch the seafood right in front of you, catch it, and then put it on the grill and serve it to you.
Can't get any fresher than that.
It was the most delicious food I've ever had in my life. But how fun would that be to find some old Greek grandmas and take some cooking classes with them, see the sights? Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be awesome. Yes.
And we learn how to live to be 100, so the three of us could
still
be doing this show in
2056.
So when we're 100 years old, we'll still be here doing this show? Hey, Schwani, is it time for the far-flung forecast yet?
How relevant would my 1960s retro commentary be?
What's a protractor? Well, thank you, Linda, from Naperville, for remembering that.
That's a very good suggestion.
It's a very good suggestion. I'll see if I can get that. I seriously would love to do that.
That'd be great.
I've never been to Sicily, and I want to go to Sicily, and I would love to do some cooking there. And this Ikaria, this magical Greek island, I've never been there either, and I hear it's fantastic.
Hmm.
So maybe we can actually put something together like that.
Yeah, if it's Greek food, Melina's in. She loves Greek food. She's got the boondoggle going for Greek islands all the time downtown because they have free valet parking.
Oh.
That's a very practical reason to go to any restaurant.
Yeah.
All right. You think Gilda would be up for that?
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
Without question.
Any chance we can get Gilda to go, but you stay home? Is that possible?
No.
Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. And And the song Billie Jean from Michael Jackson corresponds to our next segment only in title, only. Because we're going to talk about the new play, which has just opened at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater that's called Billie Jean, getting rave reviews, by the way. It is a show which is co-produced by our next guest on the show, multi-award-winning actress Lily Tomlin, Emmy winner, Grammy winner, Kennedy Center recipient, etc. Phenomenal performer, phenomenal actress. But in this case, she is one of the co-producers, along with her partner Gene Wagner, of this play, which is about tennis icon Billie Jean King, who in at the Shakespeare Theater is played by actress Chelina Kennedy. She has played a number of roles, including Carole King in Beautiful, the Carole King musical on Broadway. But it is a show that digs into the personal and professional life of Billie Jean King and how what a challenge it was, what a hurdle it was for her as a female athlete to break glass ceilings in becoming the tennis icon that she is. The play is at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater at the Yard. It's one of their smaller theaters there. The Yard at Chicago Shakespeare Theater, only for another week. It's only there until August the 10th. My understanding is they're hoping to take this whole thing to Broadway, and if the reaction is any indication, it should do really great on Broadway because everybody is coming out of this just raving like crazy. A couple of weeks ago, Lily Tomlin was here in Chicago to kind of introduce the show, to talk to the press about it. That was the week that I was in isolation with COVID, so I couldn't actually go to interview Lily Tomlin. But our pal and colleague over at WGN-TV, Mike Lowe, was nice enough to fill in for me to learn more about Billie Jean from Lily Tomlin.
Well, I thought it was important for me and my partner, Jane Wagner, who's a writer, I thought we needed to be in the forefront of this because of Billie Jean's legacy and everything she's meant to people and women in particular, but she's affected everybody. And Harriet was an acquaintance of ours, a good acquaintance, a friendly acquaintance, an old pal. So we just made ourselves available.
When you say that we all owe something to her, can you talk a little bit about specifically what you think she means to you?
Well, you know, in doing this play, we thought we wanted to make more than just a sports story, because the play is about, it's about courage and about identity and about the power of one voice to challenge the whole system. And she did that over the course of her very early life. It's just amazing how she knew what she wanted to say and do and be from the time she was a young girl, 12, 13 years old.
And go on.
No, she just spoke out. She called it the way she saw it.
This is a kind of a difficult thing to do, to stage a play about a tennis player on stage. Do you have any idea how they're going to do that and how it's going to look?
Well, I think it's going to work very well. You know, you have a lot. You can do anything on the stage. You can go anywhere. You can be in Tanzania or you could be in Omaha. You just tell the audience that's where you're going, and you do it well enough that you make them believe it. I mean, that's why I was drawn to the stage, and I've done a couple of one-woman shows on Broadway. It's a wonderful vehicle for as much as your imagination can conjure up.
What do you think about, what is the significance of doing this in Chicago as a premiere here at the Shakespeare Theater?
Well, the Shakespeare Theater is, the Chicago Shakespeare Theater, I should say, is a wonderful individual complex, and it's got three theaters. It's terribly involved in Shakespeare. I mean, one theater just for that. And it's internationally known. It's Tony Award winning. It's ideal. And the partnership here is just first rate. Harriet Levy, our producer, she absolutely raves about the whole company here, how supportive they are, how first rate they are.
Do you have any thoughts on or recollections of time you've spent in this city? Obviously, it has a rich
tradition. I've been well known for over 50 years, about 54, 55 years, and I've played here every year until recently, until maybe 5-6 years ago. I played the Goodman. I played. Little clubs and stuff. I've always been very hypermobile. I could move to different venues and places that different people go to for the audience. So I've always loved Chicago.
Can I ask you about staging?
Oh, I played Mr. Kelly's many, many, many times.
I was going to ask you about staging a play with a subject matter where the lead character is from the LGBTQ community at a time when that community is facing political pressure and attacks.
Well, that's why this play is so important, because all the stuff that Billie Jean faced in those earlier years is still echoing in the culture now. They've taken on a new meaning with the politics that are at work here.
And what is the message that this play you hope the audience leaves with after?
Well, it's about Billie Jean's identity and her desire to be totally expressive of herself, and not seeing practical issues that she suffers from. You know, the women were paid very little when they first started playing. And the men, they weren't really honored in any way at all. And Billie Jean just changed so much. She changed. She changed sports. She changed identity. She just changed the power of one voice to be heard and to be heeded. And she just didn't give up. She just, and we wanted to make the heart behind the history a big part of the play, not just a sports story. You know, it's not just that, she didn't just change the game of tennis. She changed the law. She changed her own identity. She came out and expressed herself as a member of the gay community. And she never, and even when she went back into the playing tennis as an example of what she was capable of, I mean, the audience was totally loving and forgiving and embracing her. They were so pleased with everything she'd done over the years, even though she took a lot of loss and everything else, but she did it with grace and grit, and she was a tough cookie without being tough. She was just committed. Yeah. We're not just doing a legacy about a sports icon. We're revealing and inspiring and motivating the next generation of change makers. It will give people the opportunity to see how the one voice has done all that. She's a good person.
Yeah, Lily Tomlin, one of the producers of the new play called Billie Jean, That's over at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater, but only for one more week. It will close on August the 10th. Whether or not it's going to be moving on to Broadway or not has not been announced, but I'd be shocked if that didn't happen. As I say, nothing but rave reviews for this show, so if you are remotely interested, I would try to grab a ticket. ChicagoShakes.org is how you do that. Think about all Lily Tomlin is 86 years old and looks fantastic and sounds fantastic and is going strong. She's not really slowing down too much. But, you know, think about all the things that she's done. She's got Emmy Awards. She's got a Grammy Award. She's got two Tony Awards. She was awarded the Kennedy Center Honor in 2014. She did that one-woman show that she talked about, The Search for Signs of Intelligent Life in the Universe, opened on Broadway in 1985. I'm pretty sure that's the one-woman show that she brought to the Goodman Theater. That was the first time that I saw her perform live, was at the Goodman. And I've seen her at a variety of venues around the Chicago area since then. But it was a big deal that she was playing at the Goodman Theater back then. She, received an Academy Award nomination for her film debut in Robert Altman's Nashville. She was in the movie All of Me with Steve Martin. She was in Flirting with Disaster, Tea with Mussolini, I Heart Huckabees, Prairie Home Companion, 9 to 5, of course, with Jane Fonda and Dolly Parton, and most recently with Jane Fonda in the Netflix series Grace and Frankie, which ran for 7 seasons from 2015 to 2022. Receiving 4 Emmy nominations. And of course, it also, I mean, there are many, many, many more credits for Lily Tomlin, but we would be remiss if we didn't remember that it all started on Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, the show that really was kind of her breakout role. She appeared,
I was waiting for you to mention that.
Right? 1969 to 1973. She did a variety of roles, but. What, remember her signature character that she did, Shawnee?
The phone operator.
Oh, well, the phone operator. I forgot about her.
One ringy dingy.
I forgot about that.
Two ringy dingies.
What was that character's name?
We'll have to look that up.
I'll think of it and remember. But what I was thinking was the little girl.
The little girl in the big rocking chair.
Edith Ann,
yes.
In the giant rocking chair.
And that's the truth.
And this is Edith Ann.
You know what? Last night, my mommy and daddy had a stupid party. There wasn't no clowns and no balloons, no cakes. There was just a lot of smelly drinks. And you know what? Mr. Evans punched Mr. Bluthorn for kissing Mrs. Evans. I don't know why he did it. He just got done kissing Mrs. Bluthorn right on the back porch. And he told me not to tell nobody, and he gave me a nickel. And that's the truth. Don't you fuss, Miss Pickett. Hey, my name is Edith Ann, and I'm 5 years old. And I don't have to say nothing if I don't want to. This is my doll, Miss Pickett. Last Thursday, Miss Pickett wet the bed. And we thought she'd outgrown that. It's very uncomfortable for me. And that's the truth. Miss Pickett's arms are very teeny. But if she needs something, I will get it for her. And she's bald. Once, what I did is I ate a box of Kleenex and 6 caterpillars. They tasted furry.
They ain't nothing. When I had my wagon, I ate 9 pounds of lizards and a coat.
Oh, yeah. Well, once I ate a hamster sandwich, and for dessert, I had a whole jar of cold cream.
You think that's something? They ain't nothing. I filled a bathtub once with 170 cans of cold split pea soup and marshmallows, and I laid in the bottom of it, too, just like that. Just like that. With face down, without moving, even for a year.
Yoo-hoo, Edith Ann, time for dinner.
What are we having, Mama?
Liver.
Yeah.
Liver. I hate liver. That's the truth. My name is Edith Ann, and I don't have to say nothing if I don't want, because I'm going to have a baby. You know how you could get a baby? First, you could get real fat. Then you could eat a lot of pickles. Then your daddy puts a lot of clothes in the car and gets real nervous and can't find the keys. And then the policeman gives you a ticket. And you take the ticket to the hospital and they give you a little baby boy. And that's the truth.
My sister Mary Jean brought a magazine hidden in her blouse. And Mama seen her reading it. And it had pictures of bad ladies with no clothes on. And Mama snatched it out and yelled and punished her. And then later Mama said, Edith, get undressed and go to bed. And I said, I will not get undressed. Only bad ladies take off their clothes. So I went to sleep with my coat and my shoes on. And you know what? I think it's more comfortable to be a bad lady. My name is Edith Ann, and I'm 5 years old. And I don't ever have to say nothing if I don't want to. You know what? Mama said, if a person eats too much candy, that person will get very sick. So I went to Junior Phillips' house and picked up all his candy and went in the yard and ate it all up. He's my boyfriend, and I don't want him to get sick. And that's the truth. My name is Edith Ann, and I'm 5 years old. And I don't have to say nothing if I don't want to. You know what? Last night I stayed up very late. And Mama said it isn't good for you. She said if you get plenty of rest, you will grow up to be a beautiful girl. I told that to Junior Phillips, and now he's afraid to go to sleep. And that's the truth. My name is Edith Ann, and I'm 5 years old. And you know what? My sister Mary Jean came home from the hospital where they took out her tonsils. And she got a bunch of presents, and she didn't have to go to school, and she got all the ice cream she wanted. And I thought that was a good thing. So I put my hand in my mouth and tried to pull my tonsils out. And I threw up. And all I got was sent to bed. And that's the truth. My name is Edith Ann. And I could rock this chair off the porch if I wanted to. You know what? Mama said, Buster is just a dog, and he don't need clothes, just fur to keep warm. And she's right. I found an old fur coat in Mama's cedar closet, and I took off all my clothes and wrapped myself up in it and played with Buster all day in the mud and rain, and I didn't get one bit cold. And that's the truth. Hey, my shoe fell off. My name is Edith Ann, and I'm 5 years old. And you know what? Mama put some nasty stuff on my thumb so I wouldn't put my thumb in my mouth. She said, if you put things in your mouth, you could get sick. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take that bottle and put some of that stuff on her cigarettes. And that's the truth. My name is Edith Ann, and I don't have to say nothing if I don't want. You know what? When children die, they go to heaven. In heaven, a kid can do whatever she wants. She can wear lipstick. She can talk to the animals. Animals can talk in heaven. Yeah, they could. You could put little dresses on them. And you don't have to do nothing you don't want.
and your mothers have to go to bed real early. And that's the truth. I can make a top top with my shoes.
We seem to have quite a few people on our text line interested in the food trip I was talking about.
Let's make it happen.
Just brought it up that somebody said it would be fun to go on a cooking cruise with me, with us, really. And I'd said,
we could each bring our own recipes.
Yeah.
Do you want mine?
Popcorn.
Peanut butter and jelly. Yum.
Well, I was thinking more we would depend on Italian grandmothers or Greek grandmothers to teach us how to cook food from wherever we wind up going.
Well, that would be a good idea, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. It's
like, I don't want to do all that work, though.
The cooking class?
Yeah, I don't know. Just turn on the microwave and...
Okay. Do as the box instructs you.
That's right.
You wonder
stir
why
stir for 5 minutes.
Wonder why people hate Americans. We go to Italy to enjoy some food, and Schwani wants hamburger helper. you got any spam? But we've already had quite a few people on the text line that want to sign up for the trip. We're not that advanced with this yet.
Not quite.
We'll work on it. But how fun would that be?
That would be a lot of fun.
I just think how fun would that be if the three of us traveling together?
Oh, yes, enclosed quarters
on a ship.
On a ship.
International incident.
And you can't leave
where we can't get away from each other. Incident. Boy. Oh, boy.
That's why we're separated every Sunday morning.
Yeah, this is one that even...
Now we're going to be in the same room.
Captain Stooping couldn't even figure out this problem here.
Anything but the love boat, right? Yeah,
no, it would be... Whatever the opposite is of love boat, that's what this would be.
But it'd be fun.
We'll keep you posted on this. Seemed to be a lot of serious interest in this.
Okay.
I would think this would be feasible.
Schwani, where's my suitcase? I thought you were bringing the luggage. Wait a minute. Hold on.
Do you have your phone?
Don't even get me started on my phone today.
You still don't have it?
No. When am I supposed to go to get my phone?
You could easily get your phone.
I forgot my phone in my car this morning, if you weren't listening to the beginning of the show. And it's like, when am I supposed to? It's like 20 minutes to go downstairs to go.
It's not 20 minutes.
I can't run down during a newscast or during a break or anything.
Why not?
I couldn't get back and forth fast enough.
Oh, please.
Now, if there were someone who would go down to my car for me.
Hello? So,
is the caller there? Hello.
Let's see.
Hello.
Yeah, that's right. Is the caller there?
Schenectady. Hello. You're on the air. Hello.
Well, I have a newsroom to run.
Yeah. Suddenly, you don't care about my phone quite as much. It's all right.
Andy has to watch sports scores.
I was panicked at first. You know, isn't that weird that? Like, I don't have my phone with me for a couple of hours, and I'm freaking out. But I'm adjusting to it now.
I get freaked out if I forget when I walk Otis that I leave my phone in the house.
Yeah, I know.
That's like 10 minutes, 15 minutes.
Or you come in from the store or, from work, and you've got several things on your mind, and then you just lay your phone down. And then a minute and a half later, you want to know... get something on it, and you forget where the phone is.
You panic,
yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
This is how the commies are going to get us. Got to be careful out there. Sunday morning, get this show on television, because it's really a shame that only Andy and I and producer Eli are the only ones that can see Shawnee dancing. You have busted into moves today, several times.
You've been playing all the right tunes today.
Yeah, you are Fred Astaire in there in the newsroom.
I don't think so.
Somebody's staring at us.
All right, I'm having a senior moment here. I know the song, and I can't come up with the name of the show.
The show that's celebrating its 50th anniversary, you mean?
Yes. That I saw live years ago.
Did you really?
Yes.
Fun. A Chorus Line.
Chorus Line. Thank you.
We said Chorus Line, Grandpa.
Thank you.
50th anniversary of this classic show. Just about every song from the show is classic in American theater, but they just did this huge celebration where they brought back a bunch of the original cast, and they did a free benefit performance to celebrate. Can you believe that 50 years ago?
No, I really can't, but, you know, it does make sense. It would be. I saw it at what used to be called the Schubert Theater.
Here in Chicago?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
On Monroe Street.
On Monroe. Yeah. It's called now the something
CIBC
else.
CIBC Theater.
That's right. Now. That's right. Yeah.
I saw Hair at the Schubert.
You saw Hair there?
When I was 14.
Did you really?
Thought I was a big shot. I got my date and I took a taxi.
Wow.
From the south side all the way downtown.
A taxi.
I don't even remember how much. Well, you can't get on the Illinois Central when you're on a romantic date.
Oh, I've taken dates out on...
On the IC?
No, on the CTA.
Really?
Yeah.
You romantic devil, you.
Well, I paid for it, too.
We were 14, I'm sure it was like 14, 15 years old. I think 14.
That's about the time Hair was out.
Yes. Mr. Big Shot, we get in the taxi, we come downtown, we go to the Empire Room for dinner first.
Whoa.
Not the Empire Room, but the restaurant.
You were 14 and you went to the...
At the Palmer House, whatever the restaurant was.
Oh, the steakhouse. The old Palmer Steakhouse.
Yeah, not the Empire Room was the nightclub there. We didn't do that.
Yeah.
But we're in the steakhouse. Wow. We're in the steakhouse eating dinner.
That was a good restaurant.
You know who's at the next table right next to us?
Who?
John Davidson.
Is that right? Who's John Davidson?
The host of Hollywood Squares?
Who's John Davidson, Uncle Dean? Yeah, he was. Wound up being the host.
He was a singer. He did the game shows.
He was appearing at the Empire Room.
He was appearing at the Empire Room.
Yeah. And so then we had our dinner. How did I afford all this?
That's what my question is.
I'm 14.
Working at the A&P.
I may have not even started my A&P career yet. I may have still been a paperboy. How did I afford that? Well, you know, love is blind.
Yeah, it is.
And broke.
And broke.
And then theater tickets to see Hair.
Yeah. A dinner at the Palmer Steakhouse.
And a taxi ride.
The very
and the taxi
racy ride. Hair with a nude scene in it. Because that's how I roll on my dates when I'm a teenager. Then we get back in a cab and we go back to the south side. I don't know how much that must have set me back. But that was at the Schubert Theater.
14, you couldn't have had a credit card.
No. I'm sure I must have saved
the money to do it.
Forever. Idiot.
How did the evening go?
No, not the way I thought it would go.
Okay. Okay.
For what I spent, not the way I thought it was going to go. why did we even bring that up in the first? Oh, Chorus Line.
We're talking about Chorus Line and Chorus the Schubert Line. Theater.
Yeah, Chorus Line.
Yeah. So we saw Chorus Line and then went across the street for dinner at, I believe it was called the City Tavern at time.
Oh, yeah.
Directly across the street.
Yeah, there's, that, well, anyway, that was...
Wow, that was 1981.
I remember when the musical came out, when A Chorus Line came out, and, you know, it was such a homage to theater.
And Broadway.
And Broadway and musicals and, you know, just the whole thing. And, you know, the songs were amazing and still are classics. All the songs still are classics. Very nice. All right.
Did you see it in New York or did you see it here?
I saw it here.
You saw it here.
I've seen many, many, many productions of it here. It's always fun. You know, you get that big finale.
Mm-hmm.
You can't go wrong with that.
A real showstopper.
It's a real showstopper.
Yep.
Tell you what else is a real showstopper, this Dance for Life show that you've heard me talk about many times.
Mm-hmm.
It's an annual event where all the dance companies in Chicago get together and they put on a benefit performance. That's going to be coming up in a couple of weeks. Let me tell you about that next.
WGN. Dean Richards, Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
WGN 1122, Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN, and one of the premier dance events of the year is about to take place here in the Chicago area. You have heard me talk about Dance for Life probably many, 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 many times. For the first 20 years of this incredible dance benefit, I was the host of the show. And it truly is just one of the most incredible shows in which the best of the best of Chicago's dance community get together and donate an evening's performance. And it's just one great dance company after another performing on the stage. And Dance for Life 2025 will take place Saturday, August 16th. So just a couple of more weeks for this at the Auditorium Theater downtown. And joining us to talk about it is Jonathan Alsbury, who is the choreographer for the Dance for Life finale, which is generally a combined company performance. Jonathan, welcome to WGN. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you so much. Yes, glad to be here and to speak with you.
Yeah, so tell us what's planned for this year's Dance for Life.
It's going to be such a wonderful show. It's actually the largest show that we've done with the most companies since 1993. So it's really, really exciting. We've got Chicago Tap All-Stars, Giordano Dance Chicago, Deeply Rooted Dance Theater, Hubbard Street Dance Chicago, of course, and the Joffrey Ballet. Movement Revolution will be there, the dance crew, and then Chicago... South Chicago Dance Theater, Trinity Irish Dance Company, Visceral Dance Chicago. It's really, really exciting, and we're really excited to bring in Aerial Dance Chicago for their Dance for Life debut this year.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, usually it's six dance companies, five, six dance
right.
companies, something. I wasn't counting while you were going down the list, but that's like something like 10 it sounds
yep,
like, right?
You got it. And then, of course, the finale at the end, which I get the privilege to create. It's been such an honor. I got to do it last year as well. And in the theme of having the biggest a roster of companies, I have the biggest cast, I think, that's ever happened in the finale, which is wonderful, about 65 dancers on stage together at the very end.
Wow.
Yep.
Amazing. And am I correct? Combined company performance, dancers from all of the participating companies contributing something to the finale?
Yes, not just the dancers from who will be performing that evening, but dancers from all around the Chicagoland area.
Oh, wow.
It's really wonderful to pull them all together. We spend the last couple of weeks creating the work together and coming together for rehearsal processes and talking about the health of the Chicago dance community and really fellowshipping together in creation. It's really been a wonderful, wonderful process.
I'm telling you, it is just the most amazing performance where you get to see the best of Chicago's dance companies all on one stage in one night. And if if the entertainment value isn't enough, this is also a benefit for the Chicago Dance Health Fund. And explain what that is.
Yes, the Health Fund is really an important organization. Most dance companies don't often have health insurance for their dancers, so we act as a real assistance for these dancers. They can apply for the grant, and we will pay the bills for them if they don't, if they are injured, if they're sick. We have two different grants. One is for critical health, which is $5,000, and then we have a smaller one that's just for smaller needs that dancers might need, you know, dental things or little things like this. So it's really a great resource to help dancers because, you know, we're often injured, whether we're dancing or if we're ill or something like this. We work constantly, so it's really been a wonderful, helpful assistance for people, whether it's critical needs or smaller things.
Yeah, it's that's been, you know, one of the things that I have found most attractive about this whole thing is that it's a great night of entertainment, but it's a great night of providing help to dancers who might not otherwise be able to afford health care, just basic health care. You know, we hear so much about that now of people, and is my insurance going to cover it? Is it not going to cover it? Here's a case where sometimes there is no insurance because these are artists, and that often doesn't fall in the wheelhouse of that. So it's great that it's going to be taking place, and it's great that you're going to be raising a lot of money. How much fun is it for you and the dancers? I know it's an incredible amount of hard physical work to put all of this together and rehearse, but there has to be sort of an electricity to putting on a show like this as well, right?
Oh yeah. You know, that is what I really love about the Chicago community in general. It's just, we really know how to come together and support one another. We get together in the theater, backstage with all the different companies, really fellowshipping with one another and watching each other from the wings. That's one of the best parts about it, is to just see all the different dance companies from right there backstage. And then afterwards, getting to go out into the house and meet all the people. It's a full house always at the Auditorium Theater, which is just incredible. And to be in communion with all of the people in the dance community and so many people that have maybe even never seen dance before, have never been to a dance performance. It's really transformative, and to inspire people to want to come back throughout the season and see these different dance companies during their seasons, it's just a really wonderful opportunity to engage with the greater Chicago community.
Yeah, I imagine still some tickets available if people would like to come to the show.
Absolutely. They can go ahead and hop over to cdhf.org and buy tickets. You can even buy tables. There are group packages that you can get. So, yes, please go out and get your ticket. It's going to be a night to remember, that's for sure.
Yeah, when he talks about the tables, there is an after-party gala that takes place at Venue 610 at 610 South Michigan Avenue if you want to kind of hang out with the dancers and you know, the organizers and so forth. So you can buy tickets just to the show, or you can buy tickets to both the show and the after party. Again, it is cdhf.org. Is that right?
You got it.
Or you can go to auditoriumtheater.org, or if you want to go old school, call 312-341-2300. Tickets for Dance for Life, the annual dance benefit, is going to take place Saturday, August 16th at the beautiful Auditorium Theater. Jonathan, thank you for joining us. We'll look forward to seeing you. I can't wait to see the show. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Dean Richards, Sunday morning, Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
A piece of music that will give me goosebumps every time. Superman theme from the Christopher Reeve versions. powerful. Amazing. The Superman movie continuing to do well at the box office, although Fantastic Four is going to wind up being the number one movie of this particular weekend. It is left over from last week. The new movies for this week, Naked Gun, Bad Guys 2, did not perform well enough to beat it. Still did okay at the box office, but not enough to be number one. And Superman is still going to be in the top five movies of the weekend. And I wanted to share, we never actually got a chance to share the full interviews that we did with the cast of the Superman movies. I went out to Los Angeles a few, well, it's got to be like a month and a half ago now that we went out there. Sat down and talked with the whole cast and director James Gunn. We had some terrific interviews, and we were scheduled to play those for you a few weeks ago. And somebody went and got COVID and got sick and wasn't here. That first of all, thank you. I've gotten so many nice messages from people concerned about me getting COVID. I also was very concerned about me getting COVID, but I'm doing fine now. I only bring it up to say that we had these interviews scheduled to play back for you, and because I found out that I had tested positive, called out, and we never did get to play those interviews for you. So we are going to do those for you today, and we start off with the Man of Steel himself, David Cornsweet, and Chicago's own Rachel Brosnahan, raised in the Highland Park area, and the English actor Nicholas Holt, all sitting together and talking to me about taking on these legacy roles. Dean Richards, WGN, Chicago, and congratulations on this. I cannot even imagine the amount of pressure, David, that you were under taking on one of the most iconic characters of all time. Can you even explain what that was like? Maybe what it continues to be like now.
I hate to disappoint you, but I don't think I ever felt that pressure. The really? Pressure that I felt was certainly to, as I do on every job I'm lucky enough to get, is to deliver for first and foremost my director. In this case, luckily also the writer and the studio head, so that kind of simplified things. To my castmates, once they were, you know, once we were in the room together, you want to be a good scene partner and you want to support each other. And to our wonderful crew who were turning in such great work every day, all day for, you know, the better part of a year, some of them more than that. You just want everybody to go home at the end of the day feeling like, okay, David did a good job today. I don't really think about the external pressures beyond that, because it feels like there's not much you can do about that except for the first thing, you know, except for that thing of delivering for your director and your scene partners and for the story, for the script. Now it's quite fun because I think sharing the movie with everybody, you get the excitement of them seeing all of that hard work. But we made the movie with such love and dedication and excitement for what it would end up being that it just feels exciting. It's just fun to share it.
Very eloquently put, James summed it up saying that you're kind of a dork.
Yeah.
That way.
I think so.
He's like, that's been one of the, I have to say, one of the remarkable things about watching David step into the boots, as it were, is that you can imagine, and I think people do imagine, the immense amount of pressure that you must have felt, but it was pretty extraordinary to watch David put his head down, do the work, and still manage to show up for everyone at every level, as he said, of this set. It makes him the perfect Superman.
Yeah.
It felt, and I'm sure I know it wasn't at all times, but completely effortless. And I think, I hope that'll translate to the screen. I'm sure it does. It sounds like it has.
Yeah, it probably is the only way really to deal with something like that, right? Is to just keep your eye on the job.
Yeah, that or drugs and alcohol, but those aren't my
things.
Yeah,
so,
yeah. We'd run fresh out of those.
Rachel and Nicholas, both of you also playing like such iconic characters. you know, maybe I'm wrong again about you guys feeling, you know, any sort of pressure to take on these are some of the most iconic characters ever. Rachel, was it for you being Lois Lane?
I knew it was a responsibility to step into the shoes of these characters that are so beloved. But it starts with a great script and a director who you know has a vision that you trust. And James laid the roadmap for us and also created an environment where we felt like we could trust fall into his really capable hands, but that there was also room for collaboration and to really discover through his lens new sides of these characters while still paying homage to the ones that came before. And I know, certainly speaking for myself, you know, we've talked a lot about coming from theater. That's the experience a lot. You step into these iconic roles, if you're lucky enough, that have been played by so many actors so beautifully before. And you have this feeling of stepping on the shoulders of giants when you do it. And when I look at some of the actresses who have played Lois Lane, I just feel incredibly honored to have been entrusted with this next generation's version of this character, and will be very excited to pass the torch at some point to the next person.
Nicholas, talk to me a little bit about how great it was to be a bald person.
Well, you know.
Completely. I mean, were you really, or hopefully it wasn't a bald cat?
No. I shaved it off. Good. I actually got my older son to get the clippers out, and he initiated the removal of the hair. I loved it. I find it's, no nonsense. It's quick and easy in the mornings. The makeup team on this are brilliant. I'd worked with them before in the X-Men movies. And they were fantastic because it was the same team. Alexi and Matt are the same team. So it was very cool as well working with them, because I could go in and be like, hey, I saw this image of Lex in the comic. You see this? You see the angle he's got here, or the shading here? I was like, can you subtly like allude to that with my face and do things like that? So there were lots of little things that the makeup team were doing as well that made me feel more like the character.
Yeah, that was great.
Nicholas Holt.
Carol Debo is a long-time
Nicholas
friend.
Holt, who plays Lex Luthor, Rachel Brosnahan from Highland Park, Lois Lane, and David Corenswet, the new Man of Steel, the new Superman, in this movie that now has made $300 million so far at the box office. This is going to be one of the major movie success stories of the year. It is now the first DC picture release to achieve in excess of $300 million since the movie The Batman came out in 2022. It has already passed up Zack Snyder's Man of Steel movie, director Zack Snyder. It has passed up Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. Superman is clearly headed to the $500 million mark. It's going to be a major smash for the cast members, but also for James Gunn, who is not only the director of this movie, but he is one of the head honchos now of DC Studios, bringing some of these DC characters to the big screen. We also sat down and talked with him about taking on the Superman legacy.
This I can't even imagine taking on a project like this with Superman being one of the most iconic figures of all time.
Yeah.
Expectations of every other incarnation of Superman out there.
Yeah.
How do you even go into it with you know, that many barriers in front of you?
Well, there are a lot of barriers in creating Superman in terms of, you know, everybody has an expectation of who Superman is, what he means, what his costume looks like, who his parents are, where he came from. And, you know, you have to deal with all those expectations. But at the same time, what a blessing to be able to deal with this character that is so iconic that people know all over the world. So for me, it kind of balances itself out. I think for me, finding my center was because I'm a huge Superman fan. I know what I like in Superman and what I think is absolutely integral to the character and what I think isn't so integral. And so I just had to trust myself as a Superman fan to be able to walk that line as well as I can. Also being aware that not everybody is going to like every choice I make, but maybe that's part of the fun for people anyway.
I thought it was so interesting that
so much was assumed that we knew about Superman. We knew about relationships. We knew so many things that you didn't have to waste a lot of time re-explaining the basics with this, that you sort of really just got right into the action this time.
I think that there's three things that we don't really need to see as fans, and that is we don't need to see when Bruce Wayne's parents are getting murdered, Martha's pearls on the floor. We don't need to see Spider-Man being bitten by a radioactive spider, and we don't necessarily need to see Superman as a baby coming to Earth. Those are things we know, and almost everybody knows. And for those people who don't know, we describe it with one single sentence at the beginning of the movie. Yeah. And I didn't think that was something we needed to waste time with.
What do you think your version of Superman is? How do you define him? As compared to some of the others, that maybe not even as compared to the others, but who is James Gunn's Superman?
Well, I think Superman is about as good as a person can be. I think this is a time, we live in a time when there's a lot of ugly stuff happening in the world. There's a lot of mean stuff happening in the world. And Superman is still that. Some people think he's old-fashioned. Some people think he's Pollyanna. I think those are strengths of his. I think those are the things that make him a rebel. That make him go against the grain of what's happening in today's world. And so I really love the character because of that.
Do you think he's a darker Superman? I mean, he's facing a lot of adversarial things this time. But
I think as a person, he's light. I think in terms of the world he's living in, it's often dark. And I think dark things happen in the movie. I also think that, you know, we deal a lot with Superman and his interior life and who he is and how he perceives himself and how he has to deal with that. So although we have all the pyrotechnics and action sequence and flight, the center of the story is a story about a person and his journey to, you know, redefine who he is. And so I think that's probably a big difference from other Superman movies.
Yeah. Were there any intentional comparisons that you wanted to make of things that are going on in the real world?
I think just in the fact that there's a lot of turmoil in the world, I think that's the only thing. Other than that, it is really, I came from a story perspective. I think since I've written the script, certain things in the world probably, you know, are minimal.
Yeah, it's almost like truth followed your movie.
It's like, things are a little bit more relevant than they were when I wrote the script. But it certainly wasn't. I was really just trying to, I always come from a place of, okay, if Superman's real, what would he be like? What would his personal life be like? What would his struggles be like? If he's in love with Lois Lane, what would their relationship be like? What would be their hurdles, you know? And if he was dealing with, you know, world governments, what would they be like?
You introduce a lot of other characters that are apparently going to be part of this DC cinematic universe.
Yeah.
Is that the long-term goal, to give us a little taste version now?
Well,
to introduce us to the others later on?
Not really. I mean, I think that, you know, first and foremost was just this movie is what's important. And I think it's cool that as an added benefit, we're introducing characters that we'll see in other projects down the line. In fact, some of these characters you're going to be seeing in Peacemaker Season 2, which follows right up in August, you know, in August on this. But at the same time, it really was about having, you know, when I was a kid and I started reading comic books, I opened up a comic book where it wasn't about Superman alone with a bunch of human beings. It was Superman in a world with superhero friends and a Daily Planet gang and giant monsters and, you know, robots and dogs that fly. And I think it was about just trying to recreate that feeling I had as a kid in a movie.
So was it more difficult directing the dog than it was the actual humans in this?
The dog's totally CGI, so he was the easiest
character. Oh, the dog was totally CGI.
100% CGI.
Oh,
but,
wow.
Well, the dog is based on my dog, and so a lot of the dog's actions are just we videotaped my dog playing with my cat and jumping on me and biting my feet, and then we used all those videotapes as reference videotapes. Like, I'm still, like, we're using videotapes
on
my phone.
Yeah.
So, as you can tell how old I am. But we used all that as reference for the dog. But the dog himself is completely computer generated.
It's so interesting that, like, the buzz The people are so excited to see crypto.
Yeah, they're excited to see
crypto. They're so excited that this is one thing that's never been in any of the movies before.
I think it's what crypto represents to the fans. Crypto represents really embracing that comic book world and the grandness and the magic and the imagination that we got from reading comic books. And I think that crypto is all of those things.
Yeah, and it sort of makes Superman a little more human, doesn't it?
To
have the love of a boy and his dog.
A boy and his dog, and also a dog that's really ill-behaved.
Yeah, so. Right, completely relatable. What makes David the perfect pick to be the new Superman?
Yeah, you know, I when I set out making this movie with my partner Peter Safran, I said to him at one point, we had a script that we really liked. And I said, we're about to start casting. And I said, if we can't find Superman, I'm not going to make the movie. I'm like, I know that sucks, but I can't make the movie without Superman. And I really thought that there was a possibility we weren't going to find the right person, because that person needed to have so many different elements to fit the script that we had written. And he needed to look like Superman, first of all, which is not an easy task. But he also needed to have the dramatic chops. He needed to have the comedic chops. He needed to be able to deliver the fast-paced dialogue in the style that I had written it. I was really blessed, because the second audition I saw was David Corenswet. So from the very beginning, I knew we had a contender. And he had to go through a lot of hurdles after that. But he really is. He is Superman in real life. He is a total nerd. He listens to old jazz standards. He lives with his wife in Philadelphia and his kid, and he's very, his dog, you know, Ira, and he's very Pollyanna himself, but he was the perfect Superman.
Yeah, I can't imagine the pressure on him. Yeah. I can't wait to talk
to him. He doesn't feel it.
Yeah.
He doesn't That's feel great. It. That's, yeah.
Than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound.
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman. Yes, it's Superman, strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Superman, who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands, and who, disguised as Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper, fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
That's the greatest. That's the greatest. I loved Superman comic books when I was a kid. I loved that old black-and-white Adventures of Superman TV show. And every once in a while, you catch it in reruns someplace. The special effects are so terrible, it's not even funny. But
a couple of them are in color.
Some were they colorized, or did they actually make
I think
them
there were one or two toward the very end that actually were shot in color.
The mid-1950s, right?
I know, yeah. Yeah.
It's the greatest. I love Superman.
This should be the theme song for the show.
For this show?
Yeah.
I
know you'd like that.
I'd wear blue leotards every week if we had this.
No, second thought, I'd take that back. I take that back.
Have me prancing around here 1 minute. 1 minute with glasses on, and then I run into a broom closet and change into my leotards.
See you running down the hall and just turn around and look real quickly, and like you did each and every time.
Forget that I forgot to put my leotards on.
Yeah, no phone booths anymore.
Yeah, really. What's a great metropolitan newspaper?
Yeah, exactly.
What's so many things that were in there that don't really exist anymore? I told you the story of how I
jumped off the garage.
How I thought I could fly.
Yes.
I was thoroughly convinced that if the only reason that Superman could fly and I couldn't was because he had a cape and I did not.
So you came up with a cape of some sort?
Got a big bath towel.
I can't picture this.
Maybe that was the problem, that it wasn't really a cape, that it was really a bath towel. Maybe if it was an actual cape, I might have been able to fly. But I climbed up on our garage roof and jumped. What an idiot. What an idiot, kid.
You really could have hurt yourself.
I broke my arm.
Oh, you did? You didn't tell us that part.
Yeah, I broke my
you
arm.
You broke your arm.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Jumping in an alley?
Oh.
I'm lucky that's all that happened to me.
Oh, man.
Boy, that's for sure.
The rats didn't carry me away. But I was positive. And when this is how obsessed with Superman I was, that if I was just like walking down the street, I would put my arms, I would extend my arms like Superman, and I would make the Superman noise. I would pretend like I was flying.
I'll tell you, Andy, one of these days, windows outside the newsroom here, cuckoo, we're going to see this.
Me him flying?
With the arms extended.
Oh, just
running down the hall.
Walking around?
The cape in motion.
Yep.
That's what we're going to see. I know it. I just know it.
You'll be lucky to see me in my Superman mode.
With the noise, yeah, the whole bit, you know, and the music playing.
Weren't you obsessed with something when you were a kid like this?
I actually had a little bit of a thing with Superman also, though. I didn't go that far to jump off the garage roof. But I did cut, I got my Crayola crayon set,
yeah,
and cut out a big S. S?
You put a big S on
put
your
chest? Put on a t-shirt, yeah. Walked around and with it.
Andy?
Speed Racer was my guy.
Oh, Speed Racer.
Back in the day.
Here comes Speed Racer.
My parents would park the car in the garage, and I would ask if I could just go out in the car. Sit in the car with the steering wheel, and I would push, you know, the horn and pretend the saws came out in the front. Or, yeah.
Here comes Speed Racer.
Exactly. Little Chim Chim in the back seat.
Chim Chim. Little Chim Chim.
Maybe a little Racer X coming by, secretly disguised as his brother Rex.
Go Speed Racer. Go
Pineapple Speed Grand Prix.
Racer. That was the greatest. If only we could go back to days like that.
Simple times.
Yeah. Yep. The other cartoon I always liked to watch was on Garfield Goose. Remember Hercules?
Yes.
Yeah. That was fun.
I loved Hercules. You know what I really loved on
Garfield? Clutch Cargo.
Clutch Cargo. Well, I...
With
I,
the pals, Spinner and Paddle Fish.
Pals, Spinner and Pump, pump,
dum, 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 dum.
I loved Clutch Cargo, but I loved Diver Dan.
Oh, can you sing the song?
I don't think I can.
They know in the deep there's adventure and danger. That's where you'll find Diver Dan. The sights that he sees are surprising and stranger than ever you'll see on the land.
The reason that I liked it so much is that there was the evil fish. I forget what his name was.
Baron Barracuda.
Baron Barracuda.
And his sidekick, Trigger.
Who, one of them, smoked cigarettes under the water.
That was, yeah.
Now, that's a superpower.
I cut out all the fish, too. I had the thing for Diver Dan. I made paper fish.
You made paper fish.
Floated them around, you
wow.
know.
Wow.
Yeah. Finley was Diver Dan's best friend.
And you wonder why we are the way
and
we
then,
are.
And oh, then, don't
adults.
Forget Miss Minerva.
Oh, who could forget Miss Minerva?
What's wrong, Andy?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm picturing little Davy Schwann in Northwest Indiana cutting out little fish with cigarettes in their mouths. Oh, you know what? We have one more break before the news. I should probably do that.
I think we should.
We should probably get to the news. Want to hear something fascinating about a character that we were just talking about? Clutch Cargo.
Clutch Cargo, yeah.
With his adventures with Spinner and Paddlefoot. This was a... Is it correct to call it a cartoon series? Not.
I think so,
It was animated.
It was animated, but it was a series because they had adventures in several sections, several succeeding.
Ongoing
kind of a serial.
Serial, right. But the unusual part about Clutch Cargo was that the creators of this, instead of just drawing regular animated characters, superimposed actual human lips.
That explains on the characters. The way those lips just kind of squiggled around a
right.
little bit.
Right. It was creepy.
Yeah, it was.
It was a little creepy. But listen to this. I just got a text from, I don't see a name on here, but it's 773 area code. Dean, interesting note about Clutch Cargo. The creator of the show had the superimposed lips on the characters because his daughter was deaf. She could read lips, but in standard cartoons, the lip movements didn't actually form words, and she couldn't understand what was being said.
Wow.
The superimposed lips allowed his daughter and other deaf children to have a cartoon that they could watch and enjoy.
Now, I did not know that.
About that?
I did not know that.
Who says this show's not educational?
I know. You know, that raises a very good point. Think of all the cartoon shows where the mouths just go up and down, yeah, you know.
Bump, just, bump, 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 bump. It's just sort of a, you know, it's just sort of a quick animated movement.
Yeah, yeah, you know.
So naturally, somebody with any kind of hearing impairment, but the ability to read lips, wouldn't be able to understand. Well, now they have closed captioning on everything.
Right, right.
But back in the day, you know, we didn't have that.
No.
Stuff like that. But how interesting that
that's very interesting.
I always wondered why they decided to do that. I just thought, you know, we'll do something weird and different, and it certainly was weird looking.
Yeah.
But how about that? It's actually from, now I'm reading this a little further. Patrick, sent this in. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Yeah, very interesting.
Wow, that's fascinating. When was the last time you saw a Clutch Cargo cartoon?
I know I'm going to be watching some this afternoon.
I'm thinking,
let's get this last hour done. I've got some spinner and paddle foot to catch up on.
We've got some catch up on here.
That's all right, exactly. Oh, here's the commercial. Look.
Dean Richards, Sunday morning. Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
Cargo with his pals Spinner and Paddlefoot in another exciting adventure, Swamp Swindlers.
Clutch Cargo. You got to love that. That's what we're talking about. Anyone, you know, below the age of what? 50?
No, more like 60 now.
I have no idea what we're talking about. And I guess Clutch Cargo was in other cities, right? It wasn't just a Chicago.
I don't think it was, no.
Had to be all over.
Some sort of syndicated, you know, cartoon series for children's programming.
Because I remember Conan O'Brien spoofed Clutch Cargo many times. He would do like a similar superimposed lips thing on his old late night show. So I assume he got that from Clutch Cargo, right?
Mm-hmm. Probably, yeah.
Yeah. I'm fascinated by what we learned, why Clutch Cargo's creators...
Doesn't that make a great deal of sense, though, when you think
so
about it?
It makes so much sense.
Yeah.
It makes so much sense. And also, you know, I'm ashamed to say I never really thought about kids that may have had visual or hearing impairments, that they weren't able to simply, you know, watch TV the way we did.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, that there were definitely barriers. And, you know, how did kids with hearing, especially hearing impairments, how did they enjoy television the way that we did? Never even thought of it before. So, wow, that's really opened my eyes today.
That's fascinating. Yeah. I'm thinking of other bits now that Fraser Thomas did with Garfield Goose and Romberg Rabbit.
Yeah.
Beauregard. And then, of course, don't forget Beauregard Burnside the third.
Hot dogs, hamburgers, spaghetti and meatballs.
Yep.
We are such loser dorks.
We haven't even started on Ray Rayner yet.
These are boys and girls.
Moms and dads.
What are they talking about on the radio? I don't understand one word they're saying.
Diver Dan?
You know what? If it makes you feel better, kids, we don't understand what we're saying either.
You know, I could see you in the Diver Dan suit. You keep talking about wearing the beekeeper suit.
Yeah.
We ought to, you could go to a Halloween party dressed as
in
Diver
deep
Dan.
Deep sea divers?
With the big helmet.
Yeah, like the old-fashioned deep sea diver.
And the, you know, the face mask that looks like it has a cyclone fence in the front of it.
I'm Diver Dan. Who? I would be the only, you and I would be the only ones that knew.
Would know.
Nobody else would know who that is.
No, they wouldn't.
Unless we go to a Halloween party at a retirement
home.
Okay,
you watch Clutch Cargo this afternoon. I'm going to watch Diver Dan.
I could go for a little Clutch Cargo right now. And Diver Dan.
Well, you just had the music on.
I love, I got to tell you, I love Diver Dan strictly because of that one fish that smoked cigarettes underwater.
It was probably Trigger. I think it was Trigger. It was either Baron or Trigger, yeah. One of the two.
All right.
Yeah.
We are deep into the woods
right
now.
Oh, we are. We're not getting out here. Yeah.
Andy ran out of the building like his hair was on fire. We scared him.
Ron Brown is supposed to take over 1 o'clock. He says, I'm not staying.
Yeah, or he just called in sick.
I'm not staying.
He just called in sick.
I'm going home early today.
Right.
Do we still have Eli in the other room?
Yeah, we do.
I'm here.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, we do still have Eli. You know what I like?
We're just reliving our youth here, Eli.
You
sorry.
Know, producer Eli, unlike the former Jack Hammer, who... was our producer before, Jack Heinrich, who you now hear on WGN Sports. You hear him on John Landecker's show. Jack would openly roll his eyes in his head. That didn't stop us, but he would...
didn't stop us.
Eli is at least polite.
Yeah, a little more subtle.
Yeah. Eli is at least pretending to enjoy it. So I can respect that.
Give him another 6 weeks.
Yeah, it won't take. Well, he'll turn. They all do. All right. We're going to get into our food time. I'm like Donnie and Marie today. I'm going Hawaiian on our food show. Remember that campaign? We're going to go Hawaiian when they were the pitch people for Hawaiian Punch.
Hawaiian Punch. Hey, how'd you like a nice Hawaiian Punch? Sure.
Boing.
Oh, you still there?
Shawnee got me into a cough mode here. I didn't want to share with everybody.
You scared me for a minute
there.
I know.
We're going to talk Hawaiian recipes because we had a fantastic conversation with actor Jason Momoa, who is actually not originally from the Hawaiian Islands, but when he was a young boy, his mother, was raised single mom raising him, lived in Iowa, and she moved from Iowa to, I believe it was Oahu, but she moved to the Hawaiian Islands, and that's where he was raised. We were talking about this new series that he has that's called The Last Chief. You would actually enjoy this because you're such a big history buff. This series, which is on Apple TV Plus, is about the unification of the Hawaiian Islands in the 1800s. You know, before Hawaii was, all the islands were unified and considered as one, the native Hawaiian people fought for that. And that's what this is about. It's about the battles to unify the Hawaiian Islands in the 1800s. So, you know, it's got this historical side note to the whole thing. Very, very interesting. I think really well done, really, you know, beautifully shot and very, very interesting. But when I was talking with Jason Momoa about the series, you know, a lot of times I ask the A-list stars if they have any, you know, are they cooks at all? And do they have specialty recipes, things that they cook really well that I could try to recreate on my TV cooking segment? And Jason Momoa started talking about poi. Have you ever had poi, Shawnee?
No, I have not. I know of it, but I've never had it.
It's a, you know, like a poi is made from a taro root. It's almost like a turnip or it's a root vegetable. You know, it's maybe like a it's sweet potato. It's very very starchy. And you peel it, you boil it, and you mash it. You mash it in a mortar and pestle with water, and it turns into a paste, and that is served with traditional Hawaiian food. So that's what he suggested that we make. So I thought I'm going to give it a try this coming Wednesday on my TV cooking segment. I'm going Hawaiian, and I'm going to make some poi. If I made some poi right now, would you eat it?
Yes, I would. Okay. I'm ready to try it.
Yeah. I'm already looking forward to Robin Baumgarten turning her nose up, refusing to eat it, because it's not the most appetizing looking. I've had it when I've been in Hawaii at luau's. You know, they always serve it, and it's very pasty. It's very starchy. It's not the tastiest thing in the world, to tell you the truth. But it's extremely traditional Hawaiian, so I'm going to give that a shot. I'm going to make some broiled chicken breasts with Hawaiian barbecue sauce on it, unlike, you know, those little Hawaiian buns that they have, those sweet Hawaiian buns that are so delicious. So I'm going to make some of that. I'm going to make traditional Hawaiian macaroni salad. Which is, you know, basically like a macaroni salad with mayonnaise, carrots, and onions. That's pretty much the ingredients. Super simple. But the thing that I'm looking forward to making most is something called mushubi. Have you ever heard of this?
No, that I have not heard of.
Mushubi is spam sushi.
Really?
Spam sushi. So it's a, like a layer of sushi rice, that real, you know, sticky rice.
Oh, yes. Right. Yeah, yeah.
A slice of spam, canned spam, canned meat, which is sautéed in teriyaki sauce, and it's all wrapped with seaweed. And you find this everywhere in Hawaii, mushubi. It is, you go to a McDonald's, they have mushubi. You go to a gas station, they have mushubi.
Boy, we missed it somewhere.
7-Eleven, it's everywhere.
We missed that.
In Hawaii, wow. Is everywhere. Mm-hmm. It's everywhere.
Didn't see it. Maybe we didn't know what it was when we were there. So apparently that's why we didn't try it.
Yeah, it could be. You didn't dine at some of the finer gas stations. Like I do. Oh, let's see. I'm in Hawaii. There's fresh seafood everywhere. I'm going to go to a gas station to go get some food. No, they sell it. Literally, I would see it everywhere. And I tried it. And you know what? It's actually really tasty. It's very tasty. Have you had spam before?
Oh, yeah, years ago.
Spam sandwiches, yeah. Right? When you were kids, or fried spam when you were a kid.
High school, college, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, we would have it. Well, this is like basically a slice of spam sautéed in teriyaki sauce, so it's kind of sweet, on a bed of rice. And you eat it. It's like finger food.
Would you serve this as an appetizer then? It could work as an appetizer.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm going to make it on TV this week. So you just watch Robin and Larry put their noses up.
Leave the room.
Spam. You're making spam? I'm telling you, it's traditional Hawaiian. They might like the they'll like the macaroni salad in the.
Interesting how Spam was originated in Europe and made its way to Hawaii.
I don't understand how that happened. Was that because of the war?
It must have been. Had to have been. Yes, it probably was with, you know, the different military bases that are still on Hawaii. So, yeah, it must have been the war, yeah.
The military bases, and I wonder just getting food, you know, from the, well, we weren't even, Hawaii was not part of the United States during the war, during World War
No, but II. it was like a territory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, to get fresh meat maybe was difficult, so canned meat
became
a more likely alternative. I don't know. I don't know how that happened, but Spam is, you know, somebody call and verify what I'm saying. If you've been to Hawaii, I can't believe that you didn't run into some kind of Spam dishes while you were there. What'd you eat when you were there?
Oh, we had fish.
KFC?
We had fish.
McDonald's?
No, we had Denny's. We didn't have a McDonald's.
Denny's, okay.
But, you know, fish, chicken, steak, you know. Stayed on, well, let's see. We went to two places. Didn't do all of the islands. Honolulu. In fact, we did a far-flung forecast from Honolulu.
I remember.
Remember when we were there? Yes. Yep. Wow, let's see. That trip was 10 years ago this year.
Wow.
But and then we went to another city, Hilo, which is a really cool place to visit.
Yeah.
But I don't remember Mushubi or Spam necessarily or anything. So
I was surprised. I went to get a cup of coffee or something at McDonald's once, and I'm looking at the menu, and it said Mushubi, and I was like, "What's Mushubi?" You know, you think that the menu at McDonald's is the same everywhere.
No, it isn't.
And it turns out they had a few Hawaiian favorites on their menu.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was this Spam sushi, basically, is what it is.
They didn't call it the McMcShubi?
It should have been called the McShubi
instead of Mooshubi.
Yeah, the McMcShubi. anyway, so that's coming up... yeah, Wednesday. Watch me. I bought some special equipment where you make these mushubis, because you know they have to go into a mold so everything fits together and you can wrap the seaweed around it. I'm going to bring some in for you.
Well, that'll be a first.
You're welcome. And you're right, by the way, also.
Thank you. Yeah, no, seriously, thank you. Bring some in.
I'm thinking they have a pretty good shelf life if I made them. They would last until next weekend. Yeah, so anyway, that's coming up. And we'll also get into some other Hawaiian recipes coming up after the break.
Hey, good looking.
Dean Richards, aloha, and welcome to our Food Time Show. I welcome you with the cool Polynesian breezes as we go Hawaiian on today's Food Time Show. To commemorate this new series, it's a four-part series written, directed, and produced, and starring Jason Momoa. The actor known as Aquaman. He is of Hawaiian descent. We asked him for some Hawaiian recipe ideas. He gave us some, and that kind of inspired this whole segment here today. His series, by the way, many of you have texted in and asked. This series is on Apple TV Plus, and it's called The Last Chief, about the unification of the Hawaiian Islands. that I am highly recommending to you. But let's move along here to some Hawaiian things that I'm going to be doing on my TV cooking segment this coming Wednesday. The one thing that Jason Momoa suggested that I try to make, because it's so traditionally Hawaiian, is poi, which is a paste, an edible paste that you make with a mortar and pestle. You take a taro root, T-A-R-O, taro root. It's almost like a turnip, or a lot of people compare it to a sweet potato in texture. You know, it's very starchy that way. Bake it or boil it. I guess you can microwave it. And then you put it in, cut it up into pieces, put it in the mortar and pestle, and just start mashing it, pounding and pounding and pounding and pounding, adding a little bit of water each time until you get it to a paste-like consistency. And then you serve it with vegetables. You serve it with bread, with crackers. Really, I guess the most traditional way of eating it is by literally sticking your fingers in the bowl and, taking a scoop out with your fingers. Not the most hygienic of ways to do it, but that is the most traditional. So I'm going to try my hand. Believe it or not, I've never made poi before. I don't think a lot of us here on the mainland have, but I'm going to give it a try. I've had it once before and honestly was not crazy about it, was not very tasty. But it is, as Jason emphasized to me, it is maybe the most traditional of all Hawaiian foods. So I'm going to give it a shot. You want to learn how to make poi? Watch television Wednesday morning at 9:30. That's when I do my cooking segment. I am going to do some other Hawaiian things. I was talking about this musubi, this spam sushi, which is very, very common in all of the islands. I'm going to show you how to make that. It's basically a bed of sushi rice with a thin slice of teriyaki glazed spam, the canned meat, wrapped in a little piece of seaweed. And thank you, by the way. A bunch of you have texted in the history of spam in Hawaii and why it's so prevalent there. And I was wondering if it was because of the war, World War II, and the difficulty of getting fresh meat to the islands, and that's part of it. But part of it was because canned meat was so shelf stable as well, and there wasn't a lot of refrigeration in Hawaii back in the day. So it turns out that it was, very, very practical as well. Apparently, all of this information is available in the Spam Museum. There is a museum of spam, the canned meat, in Austin, Minnesota, where spam is made. And they've got more information about spam there than you possibly could ever want. So if you're interested in more in the history of that, that's where you would go to get that. But that's one of the things. It's really quite delicious. I've had it every single time I've gone to Hawaii. I have it. I know it's not the most healthy thing in the world to be eating canned meat, but it sure is delicious. And I'll show you how to make that. Also very traditionally Hawaiian. There is a recipe that I have for traditional Hawaiian macaroni salad, which is basically elbow macaroni, mayonnaise, a little bit of vinegar, some grated onion, some grated carrots, and that's really about it. That is the traditional Hawaiian macaroni salad. People have done different versions of it to try to Polynesianize it, I guess you might say. And they put pineapple in it, and they put other, things like that that they feel are more Hawaiian. But that's not what the traditional Hawaiian macaroni salad is. I'll show you how to make the traditional. Somebody texted me and asked me did I know how to make huli huli chicken? I think that's how you say it. H-U-L-I, huli, huli, huli chicken. It's tropical Hawaiian chicken. And I looked it up. I have made this before, but I didn't know that that's what it was called. It is chicken thighs that is marinated with pineapple juice and ginger and garlic, among other things. There is some brown sugar in it. There is some sriracha in it. It's all a very Hawaiian mixture. The pineapple juice right there is, the pineapple juice, ginger, and garlic says it all of what this marinade must be like. But it's basically just taking the chicken, marinating the chicken in this mixture, and then throwing it on the grill and, barbecuing or, grilling it until it's done. Chicken thighs, very, very flavorful. I can only imagine how absolutely delicious that might be. I'm not making that, but I am going to do, just as a little side, along with the musubi and the macaroni salad and the poi, I'm just going to have some little finger sandwiches, I guess you might say, like sort of sliders of pulled pork, because, roasted pork is a Hawaiian favorite, with some Hawaiian barbecue sauce, which tends to be a little sweeter than savory, which I really like. I really like the Hawaiian barbecue sauce. But on this pulled pork, I think it's going to be delicious. And they're just really going to be like little pulled pork sandwiches on the sweet Hawaiian buns. You've seen it in the store. The bread, the buns that are so delicious and on the sweet side. Really delicious on a pulled pork sandwich. So all of that and more will be featured on this coming Wednesday's food show. So we're looking forward to that, preparing that for you coming up on Wednesday. Last Wednesday, we had some fun with some corn recipes. Now, first and foremost, I showed you how to do roasted corn on the grill. That is a must. This time of year, with corn so plentiful, fairly inexpensive out there, to throw some corn on the cob on the grill right now, there's nothing better. And I showed you several ways to prepare it. But basically, I know a lot of people boil their corn on the cob, and I just think that's sacrilegious because all the flavor goes out. When you throw it on the grill, you slowly cook it on the grill. The natural sugars in the corn are intensified, and it makes it so delicious, so delicious. And it's basically 7 minutes on one side, a third of a turn, 7 minutes, a third of a turn, 7 minutes, a third of a turn. Just keep turning it until it gets to the brownness that you want. I happen to like it a little bit burnt, if you know what I mean, on the corn on the cob. I like a few little kernels to be slightly overdone, but not everybody likes it that way. But you just do, if you do one complete rotation of the cob itself, it's about 20 minutes, 7 minutes and a third of a turn, the corn will be cooked. And then it's just a matter of cooking it until it's the way that you want it to be. And then once you've done that, you can go and do practically anything else with the cooked corn on the cob. Eat it right off the cob or cut it off into a pasta recipe, which I shared this past Wednesday. I will share it with you when we come right back.
Dean Richards, Sunday morning, Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
She's up all night to the sun. I'm up all night to get some. She's up all night for good fun. I'm up all night to get lucky.
It's 1249, Dean Richards. Food Time Show, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. Again, ready for our Wednesday TV cooking segment. I'm going to be making some Hawaiian food for you this week. It's every Wednesday morning right around 9:35. But, talking about Hawaiian food, but also I wanted to go over TV segment that we did this past Wednesday, where it was all about corn on the cob, you know, which is, you know, it's everywhere right now. This is the perfect time of year for delicious corn on the cob. So I showed you how I make it on the grill. And many of you also had some comments on that as well. Somebody asking what temperature should the grill be when you're doing corn on the cob. I would guess it should be about 375, 400 degrees, something like that. I would if you're going to take it out of the husk, which I do. I take the husk, the silk. I take everything off. And I'll either wrap it in some aluminum foil with a little bit of butter inside before I do my rotating, or you can just, you know, put some olive oil on it, some, you know, spray oil. Don't spray it on the grill, but spray it before you put on, and it'll cook, and that way you can actually see the progress and you can see the doneness of it. That's the way that I do it, but I know a lot of you, in fact, somebody else, 708 area code, said, we cook it with the husk on after we soak it in water. And I used to do it that way as well. You take the full corn on the cob's husk, silk, everything, soak it in some water, submerge it in water so the water really gets in there. And then when you put it on the grill, it's going to steam a little bit. So it cooks, you know, maybe a little bit faster. The reason why I stopped doing that, it's a mess to clean it after you've, you know, when it's cooked, you got to wait forever for it to cool down, unless you're wearing big old, you know, barbecue mitts to clean it off and to get the silk off and, you know, the whole thing. It's just a big old mess to me. I know some people prefer it that way. And when you go you know, carnivals and, you know, things like that, street festivals, that's how they do it. They do it in the husks. So some people like it that way. Some people don't. I'm not sure that one way is, you know, better than another way. I just know that boiling it takes all the flavor out of it. It boils all the flavor out of it. That is a pet peeve of mine. So I would suggest doing it that way on the grill. I've done it under the broiler, under my broiler in the house. It cooks, you know, it's basically the same, you know, theory. But what you want to do is caramelize those natural sugars in the corn. That's what makes it so delicious. So that's what I love. So once you get the corn done, and, you know, you can just obviously just eat it right off of the cob. It's fantastic. Or you can cut the corn kernels off of the cob. They have a million little gadgets for taking the corn off of the cob. And I have about five or six of them at home that I've used once or twice and thought, this gadget is stupid. I'm sorry I wasted my money on it. Because really the best way to do it is to take a chef's knife, you know, take the cob vertically, take a chef's knife and cut it straight down the cob. The corn comes off just as easy than any of those little gadgety things that they have. So, you know, you cut it off and then you can use it just as serving it as corn, just as a straight vegetable. But here's what I did last week. Here's what I did. I took the corn kernels, and I sauteed it with some fresh zucchini, which, by the way, we're in zucchini season right now at the farmers markets, at the produce markets, in the grocery stores. You should be able to find beautiful fresh zucchini at a fairly low price right now. I took maybe, I don't know what I had, like maybe four cobs of corn, cut all the corn off of it, and then took maybe four or five zucchinis, both green and yellow, and I just sauteed it all together. Not too much, because the zucchini will get mushy if you saute too much, but just enough to, you know, freshen it up a little bit. Took that, and then I had a pound of pasta. I used orecchiette pasta, which, you know, it's just a small palm-like pasta, but you can use a small shell, you can use orzo, really any kind of small pasta, even a small rotelle will work as well. Cook that up, set that off to the side, and then basically what you're going to do is just combine the two things together for a beautiful, delicious, fresh summer pasta salad. You take the zucchini and the corn mixture that you have. You take the pasta that you have, mix the two together, throw a little olive oil in there, throw some lemon juice and lemon zest in there. I have become such a big fan of lemon in my pasta. It brightens it up like crazy. It's so delicious. I took a very small red onion, or maybe, like, you know, if the red onions are big, which they almost always are, took about half of it, diced it up. I put that in there for a little bit of crunch. I took a jalapeno pepper, took the seeds out, because I, you know, with the seeds in it, it's way too hot for me, at least, anyway. So I took almost all the seeds out of it. I diced that up, and that gave it a nice little flavor. And then I took some feta cheese, and I crumbled it myself. Now, I always, this is another one of my pet peeves, do not buy feta cheese which is already crumbled, because they put additives in it and all that. Take a nice block of feta cheese and just with your fingers crumble it up, put that in this pasta and vegetable mixture, and you have yourself a fantastically delicious pasta salad. You can serve it warm, you can serve it room temperature, you can make it the day before and put it in the fridge. It's delicious any of the three ways, and perfect for summertime. Now, if you're interested in some of these recipes and the videos also where I'm actually preparing these things, you can go on WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. WGNTV.com/DeanCooks. We've got the full recipes up posted up there. We've got the videos of my cooking segments on there, so you can see me messing up. I also made a corn. It was supposed to be a corn pudding, but it didn't turn out right. It didn't, you know how when you make a pudding and then you put it in the fridge and it's supposed to firm up and turn like pudding texture? This just did not. I don't know what I did wrong, but that was a complete failure. So we show you our successes. We show you our failures. It happens when you're cooking. Not everything's going to turn out just exactly the way you want. But I'll tell you what, this corn and zucchini pasta salad is a number one. Really, really, really tasty. WGNTV.com/DeanCooks if you're interested in that. And some Hawaiian favorites coming up this coming Wednesday. Tomorrow we've got a big day on the WGNTV Morning News. Our pal, Mr. Bob Odenkirk, is going to be in studio with us tomorrow talking about his new movie called Nobody 2. It's a follow-up to his action movie. He'll be in to talk with us about that. We also have Jeff Garland in tomorrow in studio. So we've got a pretty good A-list morning tomorrow. Should be lots of fun. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for listening. As always, Steve Dale is coming up after Brown brings us up to date with all the WGN news. Enjoy your Sunday, everyone.